Text us your 950 KJR Sports headlines.
All right, boys and girls, headlines on a gorgeous Monday afternoon live from the VMAC on Softy and Dick, of course, are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
You don't know anything. You don't know squat, you stupid idiot.
Looking for tickets for the Seahawks home opener week two against Julio and the Titans. Jump on the web, VenueKings.com. Cracking tickets going crazy right now at VenueKings.com. The word is, though, those prices may start to come down day by day. So keep an eye on them right now at VenueKings.com. All right, we'll start in the NFL. Carson Wentz, who was set to play the Seahawks in week one as the starting quarterback for the Colts. That will not happen. Carson Wentz having foot surgery. I guess it's possibly could be back by the opener. They say 5 to 12 weeks. So 5 weeks from now, maybe he's back, but it's looking more and more like Carson Wentz will miss the Seahawks game. Frank Reich, the head coach of the Colts, says the job for right now belongs to Jacob Eason to start against the Hawks in week one. How about that?
A plethora of deals in the NBA. Write these down. They'll be a test. Chris Paul, 4 years, $120 million to stay in Phoenix. Kyle Lowry, 3 years, $90 million with Miami. Tim Hardaway Jr., 4 years, $74 million with the Mavs. Lonzo Ball, 4 years, $87 million with the Bulls. And Mike Conley, 3 years, $72.5 million to stay in Utah.
How much for Lonzo, you said?
Lonzo was $87
million. You think LeVar's insufferable now? Holy crap.
He spoke it into existence. He really did.
Olympics, U.S. women's national team, the soccer team, losing to Canada in the semifinals. That was a bit of a shocker. Mm-hmm. They now play Australia on Thursday in the bronze medal game.
Simone Biles returning to competition tomorrow to compete in the balance beam. Jade Carey took home the gold today in the floor exercise.
That's interesting. Greg Rosenthal, by the way, from the NFL Network, NFL.com, will join us in a matter of minutes. Host of the Around the NFL podcast. Follow him on Twitter, at Greg Rosenthal. The Simone Biles thing to me is interesting because, you know, she had the twisties, which I guess is the gymnastics equivalent of having the yips, I guess, on the golf course or on a baseball field. And I was talking to somebody this morning who said, can you believe that she's going to compete after pulling out a couple weeks ago? And I thought you brought up a good point off the air. It was so good. I'm shocked that you haven't brought it up on the air. Those takes are few and far between. So when you have one, I want you to, you know, kind of, you know, own it and claim it. What if she'd gotten hurt? What if she'd gotten hurt, you know, twisted up her knee, bruised her ankle? What? No. I mean, what if she wasn't competing because she had a physical problem and then she sat out for a couple weeks, got better, mended up, healed up, and now she's back competing in the individual as opposed to the mental injury, the mental health problems. I think people think of injuries as only physical and not mental when she was clearly going through something that a lot of gymnasts have said, hey, if she keeps competing, she might break her neck.
Exactly, and I think that's something that is going to change in the sports world. I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised 10, 15, 20 years, maybe not even that long, that we've got an injury list that includes
mental
health issues like it does knees and ankles and feet.
Yeah, isn't that kind of what you have now with the workload management thing in some ways? But it's not
a list thing.
Yeah, but they're doing it because they're fried, right?
Yeah.
They need some mental break, a physical break, the whole thing. And I'm with you. I mean, the way this world's going, man, one day there's going to be a list for people that just need a reality break. I need a reality break. I'm fried. My brain is fried. I need to have the day off. Here's my issue with that, though. What if I come out to watch you play? What if I pay big money to watch you play?
How about NBC?
Should I get my money back?
What did they pay to watch Simone Biles?
Tons. Should they get a refund? I mean, look, you know, stuff happens, right? Yeah. People get hurt. They have mental issues. They have physical problems. But, you know, a lot of teams, like I know the Kraken, for example, are charging more for the good teams versus the bad teams. The Hawks do the same thing right now. Mm-hmm. The NBA does the same thing right now. If a star takes the day off, should I get a refund as a consumer?
No.
Or do I just risk it and not even go anyway, or go and just take my lumps if the guy doesn't play?
Because you're watching the team. You're not just watching one particular.
Then why are they charging more for the tickets then?
I think there's more than one good player on that team that you're coming to see.
But, Dick, that's not it at all. They're charging more to watch the Lakers because LeBron plays for the Lakers. That's my whole point. If LeBron needs the night off, do I get a break? I give you an extra $50 to watch this guy play versus watching the freaking whoever, the Clippers. All right. Joining us right now on the radio show from NFL.com, the NFL Network, host on the Around the NFL podcast. Follow him on Twitter, at Greg with two G's Rosenthal, our friend Greg Rosenthal from the NFL Network. Greg, how are you, pal? What's going on?
What's happening?
Not much. Carson Wentz, how serious is this? How much does it change the dynamic for the Colts, in your opinion?
I think it changes it a ton because of the timeline, which is 5 to 12 weeks, which is a rather large range.
Yep.
and you think about what Carson Wentz does well, and it's mostly improvise and hold on to the ball and make athletic plays when he can. He didn't even do that very well last year, and so I had my doubts about him anyway. So if he's coming off a foot injury and he's going to be, you know, trying to get to the earlier part of that timeline, I'd be very concerned, especially with the backup quarterback situation they have right now.
It would seem to me, though, that the Colts are one of the very few complete teams that were just looking for a quarterback in all the NFL. So if they can just get requisite, you know, sub-average production from their quarterback spot, can't they just tread water the first month of the season?
They play four straight teams with that had won 10 or more games to start the season, five actually, including, you know, your Seahawks, I believe, are in there. It's a pretty brutal schedule. No, I mean, Jacob Eason is their quarterback, and he's a fourth-round rookie who hasn't done anything and hasn't looked great in practice, apparently. And you say they're a complete team, and I just would caution just because teams change so much year to year. And to me, their defensive line lost a lot of pieces. They're starting Eric Fisher, who's coming off a torn ACL, might not be ready at left tackle, and their center is out for 2 or 3 weeks right now, Ryan Kelly, too. So some now you start adding these little problems up, and, right. and the quarterback might need to do a little more.
Yeah, they got the Hawks in the opener, as you know, and then the Rams, the Titans, Miami, and Baltimore in the first five games of the year. Yeah, that's as tough a stretch as it comes. I mean, I'm not trying to sound hyperbolic here, but if Jacob Eason ends up starting and does what a fourth-round basically rookie who did not get any snaps a year ago because of COVID, no preseason, no training camp, no nothing, could you see an 0-5 start, 1-4 for them?
Yes, I could if Eason is playing. And to be clear with Eason, part of my concern is that what I've heard, his evaluation coming out of school and what he's looked like in practice, it hasn't been like, okay, this guy is a big-time player. Now, they had some faith in him to go into the season with him as a backup, but my suspicion is something will happen like it did in 2017 when I remember I was at Colts camp and I watched a quarterback competition between Scott Tolzien, Stephen Morris, and Philip Walker.
Oof.
And they wound up, Andrew Luck was hurt at the time, and they were hoping he would come back. He never did. But they ended up trading for Jacoby Brissett. And I think a similar type of move is going to happen. It's just going to take a couple weeks for it to happen because it makes too much sense to happen.
Well, the name that's being tossed around would be really, really interesting, and that is Nick Foles. And put him back in the same quarterback field with Carson Wentz. How would Carson Wentz feel about Nick Foles being an Indianapolis Colts quarterback?
It's funny because, like, the Eagles, I think at a certain point started making decisions around – being considerate of Wentz and his feelings and his mental state and everything. And so I think the last thing the Colts want to do is bring in Nick Foles, and yet it makes so much sense. I really cracked up because Nick Foles pitched himself publicly, essentially, to the Colts today. I've never seen that. I think Mina Kimes called it self-tampering, which was great on Twitter. I mean, he was trying to get himself traded, but he's due a lot of guaranteed money, so I don't know if that would be quite the fit. I wonder if they would call up the Dolphins and see if they would give him Brissett back. If nothing else, they know Brissett. They like him.
Yeah. Well, Greg Rosenthal with us. And for right now, Jacob Eason is starting against the Seahawks in week one. We'll see if that changes in the next 4.5, 5 weeks. And Greg, as you know, he's from Lake Stevens, about, an hour or so north of Seattle. Went to UW, went to high school here. We know him very well and has always had the great arm. He's always had the NFL body. But, you know, so far has not been able to put it all together. You mentioned that he has not looked great in the first week of camp. I mean, what are people around the NFL saying about this guy? Could he become maybe a serviceable NFL starter, or is that even maybe too much to bite off, you think, for him?
I know people were surprised that the Colts were going into the season with him as their backup. He didn't get a lot of snaps last year, and like I mentioned, you know, he had an abbreviated training camp. He's a guy who seems to have one speed, and it's fast. And Frank Reich's system, to me, is all about timing, and it's all about precision. And Eason, you know, like Carson Wentz, has some physical tools to get you excited, but it's a fast learning curve to face a live NFL defense, and he'll do that for the first time in his life in this preseason.
Greg Rosenthal joining us. You know, I don't particularly like Mike Zimmer all that much, but I do kind of feel for him a little bit right now as he's kind of pleading his football team to get the vaccination, and it doesn't sound like they're listening very well to him. Why has a person like Pete Carroll been able to keep COVID out of the locker room entirely in 2020, the only team that could do it, and then has like a 98% vaccination rate in 2021? Does that have something to do with like the level of respect that the players have for the coach?
I'm tempted to say it comes from the top down. And yeah, in Seattle's case, that's Pete Carroll. If you look at Pittsburgh, they were one of the first teams this offseason to go over 80, 90%. That's Mike Tomlin. That's the Rooney family, I know, was really getting involved. Ownership and making a push. That said, some of these teams with the really low vaccination rates, it's like Ron Rivera is one of them. He's got seven guys on the COVID list, and he's pleading with his players. He's immunocompromised after going through cancer, and they're not listening to him. And he seems like one of the coaches that has the most respect from his locker room. So this is just an issue that, you know, that it cuts so deep in this country that I think some of these players, and Kirk Cousins is one of them. He said he said he would risk his death really a year ago, like talking like Ivan Drago, then he would get the vaccination. And that's one of the reasons he's not playing. He did not test positive for COVID, but the rules are different for him. And since he was in the room with Kellen Mond, who we've reported has tested positive, then he has to miss more practice. Than Jake Browning, for instance, who's their backup quarterback and is out there and is vaccinated.
Greg Rosenthal, Greg, I'm curious about that story, not just Washington and the Vikings, but the COVID issue that Dick brought up, because I wonder as a reporter, as an NFL reporter, is it important for you and for the entire NFL media corps to report that a player has had a shot or not? Because when you start to read stories about players testing positive, I think the natural reaction from some people as well serves him right. He's an idiot. He didn't get a shot, blah, blah, blah. We're hearing a lot of stories of guys that were vaxxed, even in baseball, and are testing positive for COVID-19. Is it important for you to pass along that detail when you report these stories?
I think, you know, the moment that it impedes his ability to do his job. Yeah. Like Lamar Jackson, for instance, is out for a mandatory 10 days because he tested positive. If he had been vaccinated and tested positive, like you mentioned, there would be a different timeline for him to return. So you got to tell the public when the starting quarterback is out that he could be back in 4 or 5 days, or he could be back in 10 days. I don't know if you need to know about every player, but certainly once they do test positive, and when you're talking quarterbacks like Kirk Cousins or Lamar Jackson, I mean, because you want to know that if that happened during the season too, you want to know how long this quarterback's going to be out for. It happened to Lamar once already.
So what is the difference then for fans that maybe don't know, for a guy that tests positive who is vaxxed versus one that doesn't? What's the difference in protocol there and the repercussions?
Basically, you have a minimum 10 days quarantine if you are vaccinated. And then you have, if you're unvaccinated, rather. Whereas if you are vaccinated, you can return basically once you start testing negative.
Gotcha.
In a lot of times in these cases, and we've seen it happen a little quicker than that long of a quarantine.
Well, I know here there are a lot more businesses, as this Delta variant continues to rage, there are a lot more businesses just flat out mandating vaccines. That's just all there is to it. Now, players' unions really strong. Are we going to see a push towards that if this continues to get worse?
No, I don't think so, because, first of all, the progress by NFL players has been pretty remarkable. If you just look at the numbers, it was 50% in mid-June, and we're up the players are around 90% now, or 85 to 90. So for the most part, it's worked. I mean, there are some teams that are lagging, but I've heard even those teams that were around 50 a week ago, like that's creeping up towards 60, 70. And a lot of the teams like the Seahawks are closer to 100. So no, I don't think there'll be any mandate for the players. I think ultimately they've gotten what they wanted to done, and more will continue to get it. That's what we continue to hear as the season gets closer.
All right, Greg Rosenthal, NFL.com with us real quick. D. Eskridge, the Seahawks second round pick, wide receiver, has a foot problem. We'll see how long he's out for, but we're thinking about maybe the Hawks would take a look at some free agent wide receivers, and Golden Tate is one of them out there. I mean, what's the free agent crop of receivers look like? What do you make of Golden Tate as a potential replacement for D. Eskridge and bringing him back to Seattle?
you know, I always was a huge Golden Tate fan. Thought he was undervalued. He did not look like the Golden Tate of old the last 2 years, I would say, but especially last year. And so to me, that one doesn't make a ton of sense, because that's a slot position that the Golden Tate's going to play. You could argue that you do need to find a better backup for Tyler Lockett. They know they have a couple of young guys, but right now I think your third receiver is probably Freddie Swain there on the outside, and you're right. You'll be looking maybe for some other guys who get cut off of rosters towards the end of August. It's always a little bit better of a crop of players than the ones that are available right now. So some decent guys will get cut.
Greg, who in your mind won the Aaron Rodgers standoff? And can you explain his contract to me, exactly what he has left on it? I'm not sure.
I'm a little confused by it, too. I mean, no one won, but the Packers did, if you're making me choose one, because okay. Rodgers got very little from it. He just showed back up to work. They knocked the year off his contract, 2023, but he still has 2022 on the books. What they did agree to essentially is to revisit the situation after the season. They adjusted some contract language, which in theory could help him choose his next destination if they are going to trade him, because he could now threaten retirement without them going after his money. And I think they probably gave him a verbal, you know, agreement that they would work with him if that happens. But they're also holding out the chance that they just want to keep him. They still hold all the cards. He even said he you know, isn't ruling out the possibility. So to me, he got very little. And the Packers, if they trade him a year from now, which I still think is likely next offseason, unless, you know, they win a Super Bowl, they're going to get all the assets. So they got the year of Aaron Rodgers that they want, and they're going to get the trade assets most likely in 9-10 months.
Yep. Greg Rosenthal, man, always great stuff. Appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk down the road.
Thanks,
man.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, guys.
You bet. Greg Rosenthal. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Giga with 2 G's, Rosenthal. I was going to ask him about Russell Wilson. Would Russell Wilson sign? Will he sign another contract in Seattle? He's got 3 years left on this one. So if he does re-sign, we're talking about not one but two off seasons from now, right? The off season of 2023 going into the 23 season would be the year where that would come up. And I just think that until he signs an extension in Seattle, every off season it's going to be a story. You know, do they sign him? Do they extend him? Is everything okay? What's going on here with that? So I would think he plays minimum 2 more years in Seattle because the Hawks have him locked up for 3 more years. But I'm curious, man, to see where this thing goes in 2 years from now. 2 year off season going into 2023. Will they get Russell locked up to a new deal then, or does he walk and play somewhere else after the year's over?
Well, I think some of it has to do with how well he meshes with Shane Waldron and what this offense looks like. I mean, I don't think all of it has to do with it. I think we're in a good place with Russell Wilson right now. I've always thought we were in a better place than most people did, but I really think we're in a good place right now with Russell Wilson.
Don't you think, though, that if the Shane Waldron thing doesn't work and they want Russell back, they just fire Shane Waldron? I mean, who the hell's Shane Waldron?
Yes.
Right? I mean, honestly, yes. I mean, I'm hoping.
But I'm just saying that Russell, you know, if Russell could, if he continues to get hit and,
right.
you know, if the offense does not evolve the way Russell wants it to evolve, then he may look and say, you know what? It doesn't matter who the offensive coordinator
sure.
is. You still can't get an offense that evolves. So it's more of a, then he, I would just suppose that he would think, hey, this is more of a organizational Pete Carroll issue than it is an offensive coordinator issue. I don't think that's going to happen, and I think they're in a good place with Russ.
Well, obviously, they made a change to the offensive line. They didn't make a lot of changes. I mean, really, it was just Gabe Jackson. That's it. So if Russell is truly – if Russell's number one goal before he decides on his future is to make sure he can stay protected in Seattle – then Gabe Jackson just became maybe the most important person on this franchise because he's the only difference between last year's offensive line and this year's offensive line. He's the only guy that they brought in from the outside, right? They moved guys right. around, obviously, but the only real upgrade they made was the left guard spot.
Right, but I think
that's it.
I think Shane Waldron protects Russell Wilson.
No, sure, absolutely. I'm right, but I'm saying if that offensive line can do their job that Shane Waldron wants them to do, and they're moving him around and all kinds of stuff, but you know, if they're still trying to drop back 5-7 step drops and all that stuff, they're going to need Gabe Jackson to step up. I mean, he's a gigantic piece to this football team, a gigantic piece to their future. So hopefully the guy knows what he's doing because he's the only change they made. We got a break. 5:20 is the time. Will Disley, Seahawk tight end, going to join us coming up around 6:10 tonight right here live from VMAC on 950K.